You're listening to The Big Show with Patrick Dumas on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Welcome to The Big Show, Hour 4 here from Doug Lacey's Basement Systems downtown studio. Cracked foundation, bowing foundation walls. We have a simple permanent solution to stabilize your foundation. Contact Basement Systems. They are all things basement. Visit dlbasementsystems.com. We go down the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. Super excited for this chat. We're joined by Calgarian WWE superstar Natalya. Natalya, thank you so much for taking some time out of your day and chatting with me here.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you.
Hey, no problem. First, I know you got a busy day ahead with other media stuff to do, but I just want to get your thoughts quickly. WrestleMania 40. It was the biggest event ever. Triple H was calling it after the show, and we all know how it all ended. But just your thoughts on that show in Philadelphia.
I thought it was great, and I think it was just truly, it was so good because there were so many good stories.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I think that when you look at the bloodline and I think about the stories that came that were kind of spun from the bloodline. And I think like that's a huge reason why I think WWE is just booming because of the stories that are going on today. And you look at, the bloodline really starts with Roman Reigns. And Roman is undoubtedly one of the greatest WWE superstars of all time, but he played the ultimate bad guy.
Oh, yeah.
And along with The Rock. And when you saw The Rock come in and, he kind of had this like feeling of being a little bit of an authority figure, a modern day Vince McMahon, so to speak, when we looked at the Attitude Era, Vince mm-hmm. was that authority figure. When you look at The Rock being on the board of directors, and I look, even in WrestleMania, The Rock told the referee, if you don't do what I say, you're going to be fired,
yep.
sort of thing. It just kind of like they played their characters so well. And they allowed Cody Rhodes to have that feel-good moment. And I think what the world needs more today is hope.
Oh, yeah.
And Cody winning, the big one this year at WrestleMania, it really just gave everybody hope. Even if it wasn't, even if it was just subliminally, it made people feel hopeful. And when people feel a certain way, you always remember the way someone or something made you feel. And that's what this WrestleMania mm-hmm. was about. It wasn't about moves. It wasn't about crazy spots or flips or dives or, it was about the way you felt after. And I think that really stems with that story with Cody Rhodes and the bloodline. So, I think it was just a great all-around WrestleMania. And I would say WrestleMania is so special because it's not just about WWE. It's about the entire wrestling world mm-hmm. coming together and coming together as a big family and supporting each other from every sort of walk of life. And I'm proud of that,
yeah.
really proud of that.
No, as you should be. And I know you mentioned it during the Hall of Fame broadcast. Every 15 years, there's a brother versus brother match at Mania. WrestleMania 10, your uncles, Brett and Owen, battling it out. And then WrestleMania 25, you have Jeff and Matt. And then, WrestleMania 40, you got the Jimmy and Jey Uso going at it. Do you fancy yourself as, I know you're huge into the history of this business, obviously growing up in the family that you did. But do you fancy yourself as a historian for wrestling?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, I love... It's funny because Triple H, he's like a wrestling historian. He loves old school
yeah.
wrestling. He loves the history that came before us. But my family, and this might sound arrogant saying it, but I believe my family is one of the greatest families in professional wrestling.
Hey, nobody,
if not the greatest.
Hey, no, I agree.
and I think that when I look back to so many special things in my family, my grandmother actually helped pick out Gorgeous George's music, Pomp and Circumstance.
Wow.
He was people don't know that.
That's awesome.
My grandfather, Gorgeous George, wrote letters to my grandfather telling him how to help run his promotion better. This is what you can do. This is what we're doing. And I love the history of the people that, have worked with my family. And the history of the business is so important. My grandfather actually got his start from Toots Mont. And Toots Mont helped, helped the McMahons with getting into wrestling. And my grandfather actually got his start into the industry with Toots Mont. Paul Bosch introduced my grandparents, Stu and Helen Hart. So without Paul Bosch, we would never have a Hart family, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
So there's just so many great things. I love the history of the things that the family has done in general. Like in another little tidbit, but my grandfather actually broke in Fritz Von Erich into the
wow.
industry, and the
yep.
Von Erich family lived at the Hart House.
Nice, yeah.
So my grandfather's had a huge hand in helping so many people get into the industry and to get to where we are today. So for me, yes, the history of the industry is very important. The history that my family has made is very important. And when you really understand the history of the business, it helps you in moving forward in the business.
Oh, exactly. Let's go back. Let's talk about you. Let's go back to Monday night. You know, Roxanna Perez is one of the up and coming talents, current NXT Women's Champion. You know, you kind of call her out there after her match there on Raw, and you get a title match on Tuesday. I know it didn't end up going your way, but you know, you've spent a large part of your career lately, you know, helping develop a lot of these women, and I don't know if that was what you saw when you got into the business for yourself, but you're a leader, and I just want to know, like, what's that been like for you?
To me, I jumped at the opportunity to go to NXT because some of the greatest moments in my career were at NXT, like my match I had with Charlotte Flair in 2014. And, you know, NXT is also primetime television. So it's, you know, when you're, anytime you're on the USA Network, it's, and it's during that time slot, it's primetime TV. Yeah. And we're one of the highest rated shows on the USA Network. So when I was asked to go down there, and I say down because it's in Florida, but like it was a huge honor for me because Raw is its own brand. NXT is its own brand. SmackDown is its own brand. It's a huge honor to be a part of any of it. But I really wanted to go to NXT to work with new women. I probably have a world record for working with the most women in WWE history.
Oh, yeah.
And so for me, I've worked with over 60 different women in WWE, and I really wanted to work with women that are hungry and love this as much as I do, like Roxanne Perez. To have that match with her, I mean, I met her in a parking lot outside of a live event for a WWE show when she was a teenager. She was a young girl. I think she was like 13. And she came up to me, and this is actually captured on tape because we were filming Total Divas at the time. And we both shared it on our social media, but she came up to me and said, I want to be a WWE superstar like you. What do I do? How do I become that? Fast forward to all these years later, and I'm wrestling her as a, you know, she's a women's champion. And I'm wrestling her, and we had a beautiful match. She was such a fantastic opponent, and she was everything that I had hoped for in an opponent. It was like our chemistry was just amazing. I loved every second in there with her. It was just magical. And it's why I love what I do in WWE, and it's why I jump at the opportunity to go to NXT and working with Shawn Michaels.
Oh, yeah.
Working with Shawn, and I won't reveal too much, but he had helped us a lot during the day, and he was really, really hands-on. And Shawn Michaels is such an asset to the industry, and he helped me a lot when I was there this past week at NXT, and it was just so cool to be able to work with him and to work with the mind that he has for the industry. It was really, I'm very, very grateful for his help.
You've been a part of the women's revolution. You know, we know where the women were on the card when you started, you know, how they were treated. And, you know, now they're just as part of the big show, the show as the men are. You don't even think about, oh, well, here's women's wrestling. You know, it just goes in hand. Just how awesome has that been for you to see the women take over this company and just be the stars that they are now?
I think it's great. And it shows that there's just so much interest for women's wrestling.
Oh yeah.
And you know, it's like we some of the greatest performers in our company, it's not like, oh, she's good for a girl. Some of the greatest performers in our company, they're women. And I think, you know, I'm proud to be one of those people and to have the longevity that I've had in WWE for nearly two decades, uninterrupted. I'm proud to work with women like Rhea Ripley, Becky Lynch, Bayley, Charlotte. I'm proud to work with women like Bianca Belair and Naomi, you know, Io Sky, the Kabuki Warriors, naming off all those girls. Like Dakota Kai is a dream match of mine. I would love to work with her. There's just so many women that I'm so proud to work with in the company. And it's funny because I remember Triple H one time saying, you know, he doesn't want the girls to be looked at as, oh, they had a good match for being girls. And he wants the women in WWE to be looked at. That was the best match on the show.
Yep.
Not girl or guy, but that was just the best match on the show. And I think that like that really resonated with me because the women are just doing such great work. We're pouring our hearts into our performances. And it shows. And it shows in the ratings, too. Mm-hmm. It shows in, you know, our numbers. It shows on social media. The women are captivating. And it's exciting to be a part of the industry with so much momentum right now.
Oh my God, yeah, they've been a huge part of the product, and you know, like I said, been saying with my friends, like wrestling, it feels wrestling is fun again. It's awesome to be a fan, whatever it is. It's such a good product right now. You mentioned Dakota Kai as a potential dream opponent for you. I know Jade Cargill, she made her debut at the Royal Rumble. She had her first real official match at Mania there, and she spoke glowingly about you, that you helped her, you know, get up to pace and get up to that WWE style. Talk about her and her future in this company, because my God, she's got the look, you know, she's got everything, and I think she could be a real big star in this business.
Yeah, I you know, with Jade, I think she has something that you can't buy and you can't teach.
Nope.
It's just in you, and I feel like she has that it factor. And you know, she walks out there, she's got a presence. She walks through an airport, she's got a presence.
Mm-hmm. And commands a room.
You know, it was really, yeah, she can command the room, and she's got confidence. And I think it is so important for little girls and little boys and just people everywhere around the world to know that it's all inside them. Everything that they want to achieve, all of their dreams, all of their hopes, everything that they can dream of, it's inside of them. And when you see that confidence in Jade Cargill, it makes everybody else want to be more confident. And it makes everyone else go, damn, I want to walk into a room and like have that same energy. It's made me want to be more confident.
Oh, yeah.
And just truly believing in yourself. And of course, you know, this is a huge adjustment for her coming to WWE and adapting to the, you know, it's a very fast paced machine.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that, well, she did amazing at WrestleMania. I was so proud of her, and Bianca and Naomi. I thought they had incredible performances. Of course, they couldn't have had those performances without their opponents, Asuka, Dakota, and Kairi. But I just think that Jade is somebody that, you know, I would love to face off against Jade. I would consider that a dream match for me, and like, I want to make it happen. I would love to see that happen in 2024.
I think that would be amazing to see for sure. I know we're coming up, running up out of time here, but I know you're from Calgary. I know the schedule's you know, pretty crazy for you guys, but do you still get a chance to come up here and visit with some of the folks you grew up with?
Yeah, I do actually. Yeah. I try to go up to Calgary a couple times a year. My first, you know, whenever I go to Calgary, the first thing I do is go to Tim Hortons. I'm obsessed with, I love my Tim Hortons.
Of course.
I go to Tim Hortons. I catch up with my family. I always meet up with Brett. We always have dinner together and a glass of wine. And we always, like, with Brett and I, we never miss a beat. We always pick up where we left off. And it's just so nice to be able to connect with my family, my cousin Harry Smith, my uncles Bruce and Ross Hart, who were my coaches down in the dungeon when I first started learning all of this. And of course my entire family just means so much to me, but being able to go back to Calgary is everything to me. And Calgary, it's always going to be where my heart is. Calgary is always going to be my home. And I just have so much love and respect to the city. And it's, you know, like for me, that's where I want to be buried, is in Calgary. So yes, it's my heart, it's my home, and it's always going to be a massive part of my life.
Well, Natalia, thank you so much. You keep doing what you're doing. You're doing an amazing work. You know, you and your husband, TJ Wilson, also doing a hell of work, him producing a lot of those women's matches as well. You guys are doing great work. Keep it up, and hopefully we'll see you here September 10th or September 9th on Raw when you guys roll through the dome.
Oh, I can't wait to see you guys, too, and thank you so much for the time.
No problem. There you go. Natalia, WWE superstar from Calgary. She's been doing some great work helping out their developmental brand, NXT. She was in a match there on Tuesday against their women's champion. And like I mentioned there, her and her husband, TJ Wilson, he wrestled under the name Tyson Kidd, also from Calgary,
yeah.
one of the last graduates as well.
Tag team champion, right?
Yes, him and Harry Smith, yeah. Mm-hmm. And the Hart Dynasty, where Natalia made her debut back in 2007. And Tyson had to have his career cut short because of injury, but he's been doing great work behind the scenes. And Natalia, you know, like we talk about, like, out of all the run of the women's stars in that company, she's been there the longest. 2007 is when she made her debut, and we know where the women were treated in WWE or how they were viewed, you know, back in that day to where they are now, where they're headlining shows. They're not just a 5-minute bathroom break, as people thought. These are quality matches. Natalia,
well, they were called divas back then too.
Well, yeah,
like,
they weren't
even considered wrestlers at a certain point. You know what I mean?
Natalia mentioned the show Total Divas that was that aired on E, which was it was the women that weren't so much the the ones that were focused. It was kind of in that transition period where she was in that show, but that stuff is gone nowadays.
She helped usher that in, for sure.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. She's been a huge part of the revolution for the women, and it's been a great, the WWE is killing it right now with what they're throwing out there right now. Natalya is a huge part.
Yeah, WrestleMania was sick. I actually watched that, you know. I'm not the biggest wrestling fan, but like, you know, I've always kept tabs on it throughout my life, and right now I'm kind of getting back into it. And WrestleMania 40 was amazing.
Well, you know, like, yeah, you'll have all the superlatives and everything. Yeah, it's the biggest show ever. No, it really did feel like it was. And you're gonna hear that every year. Like, they went to the two nights during the pandemic for WrestleMania, and then that's just been the going rate here. Like, that's what they're gonna do every early April. It's gonna be two nights WrestleMania, and then like. It's great. The product as a whole, not just away from the WWE, wrestling is good right now, and it's really fun. Really fun to be a part of that. It is a Calgary Flames game day. They're in Los Angeles tonight, taking on the LA Kings. We will have Tommy Wheeldon Jr. join us at 9:30, give us a little preview of the Cavs season. They're in Hamilton to take on Forge on Saturday to open up their CPL campaign. But we'll talk a little Flames and Kings here tonight. They didn't speak to the media yesterday. I know, You're kind of getting what with news.
Things are winding down.
You're winding down. They only got a few games left in this season. It's like, hey, you can kind of mess with Los Angeles and maybe knock them down into a wild card spot, which, you know, as Dennis Bernstein said, they would probably prefer to play the Oilers. But even then, I'm not a believer in this Los Angeles Kings team. And, you know, they had a really good start to the year that kind of faded down. And, I'm really excited to see Quentin Byfield as he continues to grow and age in his career. But right now, like, PLD, I know he's been a little bit better of late, but he hasn't been that true guy that they were acquiring him. And I don't know why, how many more times we have to do with this guy, because it's like, it's baffling to see, like, we'll just give him a giant contract here.
Yeah, it's super interesting because, you know, he forced himself out of Columbus with that situation, and he ends up going to Winnipeg in that Line A trade. And then he's forcing himself out of there, and then he gets to a situation where you'd think you're in sunny California, Los Angeles, and now it's your time to see if you're worth the price of admission, and he just really hasn't out in Los Angeles, especially for what he's getting paid. With LA, I know you mentioned Byfield there, and Dennis was saying that he's on a bit of a gold drought here. I still think he's a player that can grow into a situation that maybe he's even on a Team Canada roster in the near future here. The only thing you really like about LA is probably their center depth, but again, their goaltending is a little, like, definitely iffy come playoff time with Talbot. And
well, that's
Riddick,
what I mean. So. Like you're just like if Talbot has a bad game one or two, you know, like they're not scared to go to David Riddick for game three, and they might be the one team out of the Western Conference. I know Vegas can go. I know Logan Thompson's been going right now. Aiden Hill's been banged up and whatnot. Maybe LA's the one team that you're not certain with the goaltending out of the teams that are in the postseason.
Yeah, that would make sense. I would think so. The Oilers, you're probably not totally certain with them as well, right?
I think
Skinner has been good, but it's like,
but I mean, yeah, you go down 0-2.
Question marks of, like, you know, how can he really rise to the occasion in the postseason here? He's done a really good job of you know, and proving some doubters wrong to keep the Oilers afloat here. And when they were going on that massive winning streak, it's not like the Oilers were, you know, scoring 9 or 10 goals. It's like some of those games are really close games, and Skinner was the reason why they were able to come away with some of those wins during that streak. So he's proved some doubters wrong, but when it comes to the playoffs, that's when you really got to answer the bell, and Skinner hasn't really done that yet, but we'll see.
You know, you can only do it when you get there for the first time. And I mean, yeah, well, there's only four about. They have the two games in hand. They'll play the back-to-back tomorrow and Saturday, and then they have one more to close out the season. So the games are there to make up the hay, and we'll see if Connor McDavid's going to play here. We'll see. I mean, like, the team didn't miss a beat without him. I know Vegas has been struggling of lately, and I think Vegas is probably going to struggle in that first round as well. Mark Stone is just such a catalyst for that team. You know, how effective will Tomas Hertl be when he gets there?
Yeah.
You know, yeah, Vegas has we'll show up in the postseason. You always have to give him the benefit of the doubt.
How healthy is Aiden Hill, too?
Exactly. And I think you're playing Dallas. I think the way the stars are rolling, like, I'm really excited to watch that game tonight, because I think it's going to be a Winnipeg measuring stick game.
Yeah.
If Winnipeg can stay competitive with Dallas, you may make you feel a little bit better than going up against that series against Colorado. Mm-hmm. I don't, you know, it's all about staying competitive right now. Yeah. For them, but
you mentioned the Dallas Stars there, man. Mm-hmm. You talked to Newkirk yesterday, Owen Newkirk, mm-hmm. The Stars radio host in hour four yesterday. And throughout that entire conversation, I was just trying to figure out, like, what is the Stars' weakness?
Mm-hmm.
What is their weakness? Their lineup is completely balanced with youth yep. and a lot of veteran players. And those youth guys that I'm talking about mm-hmm. are their core guys that are driving the play.
Yeah.
Ottinger's been playing great the last couple of weeks here. Mm-hmm.
And he'll set the record tonight with a win.
Yeah, they're peaking at the right time, yeah. and they look like an absolute wagon out west.
Well, it's like you look at Jason Roberts' stats. Well, good, there's like almost a 30-point drop-off from last year, but then Owen explains it the way he did. Like, the team has been asked, hey, we're just going to shake out the scoring throughout this lineup. We can roll four lines, you know, better than a lot of these teams do. And I think among the top in the West, Dallas probably can roll four lines and three pairs of defense better than anybody in this league right now.
Like, Wyatt Johnson is a super effective player. Same with Logan Stankoven, who's came out of nowhere and has been awesome for the Dallas Stars over the last couple months while he's been up with them. And they're playing on their third line. And Duchesne has been found money for him. Like,
he's
on
been
such
still
a
the
cheap
best,
contract.
Best signed UFA contract for points this year.
I absolutely loved that contract when the Stars picked him up, when Nashville was just kind of letting him go.
Well, yeah,
it felt like he had so much more left in the tank. Like, this guy was almost a 40-goal guy 2 years ago.
Yeah, I think Barry Trotz made the whole deal with why Duchesne's like, you know, Nashville isn't where you end your career. We know Matt Duchesne's love for country music, and I think maybe there's some people in the organization that felt that he was just here to close out his career, and maybe he's proven them wrong here, because he's having a, you know, it's not like Dallas is, you know, Dallas is a country music hotspot too. It's not Nashville, it's still Dallas, but still
Texas.
It's still Texas. But yeah, it's been fun watching this Dallas Stars team. They are a wagon. They have potential to win their first President's Trophy since they won the Stanley Cup back in 1999, one of eight teams to win the President's Trophy and the Stanley Cup in the same year. Quickly look at the schedule tonight. There's 10 games. The second to last busy night in the NHL. We'll have 13 games on Saturday. But the big game everybody's focused on, they're circling. 5:00 start, PPG Paints Arena. You can watch this one on Sportsnet Pacific and East. It's the Detroit Red Wings visiting the Pittsburgh Penguins. The Red Wings obviously have they're trying to end an 8-season playoff drought with their young group. Well, the Pittsburgh Penguins, who were left for dead trade deadline, have now won 6 of their last 10. They were able to get a really valuable loser point against the Toronto Maple Leafs in their last outing. They find themselves 1 point back of the final wild card spot, 3 back of that final spot in the Metropolitan Division. But your read here as we head into the biggest game of the night, Penguins-Red Wings.
Yeah, exactly. We had Cosentino on in hour two, and we asked him the same question there. And, you know, the sentimental pick is that you want to go with the Pittsburgh Penguins and you want to see Sidney Crosby drag this team into the playoffs like he has down the stretch here, having another amazing year. Father Time just not catching up to Sid the Kid just yet. But if you're asking me who's the better team, I still think it's the Detroit Red Wings. DeBrincat has been a great fit there. Patrick Kane, with the addition he's been as a Red Wing, coming off of a surgery where we didn't really know what you were going to get out of Patrick Kane, that hip resurfacing surgery, and he's fit in quite well there. I like some of their decor here. Like, Sider has been a guy that is going to turn into, like, I'm not even sure like what a good comparison could be, like almost like a Chris
the
Pronger.
The ceiling is still
almost
very
like,
high.
I think
there
the ceiling
Sider.
Is like Chris Pronger.
Yeah.
To be honest, I think he's that type of player. And all in all, I think out of those guys who are kicking around this final wild card spot, like, I don't have any faith in the Philadelphia Flyers with the way they're nose diving. Cosentino also mentioned just the
minus
the cold,
40.
Like, that is crazy that team is still kicking around the playoffs. So I'm going to go with the Red Wings, but my heart wants to say Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I'd like to see Detroit just for the sake, you know, ending a playoff drought. And we know those Detroit hockey fans, they deserve some good as well. But hey, the ratings, the TV, they want Crosby for sure in a first round. It is Calgary Flames game day. They are in Los Angeles to take on the Kings, Crypto.com Arena. 8:30 puck drop. We'll be on the air at 7:30 with your Flames talk pregame. Around the corner, Cavalry FC get ready for their season opener this Saturday in Hamilton against their forever rivals, Forge FC. General Manager and Head Coach Tommy Wilden Jr. joins us next as Big Show Hour 4 continues here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Welcome back, Big Show Hour 4. I want to thank WWE for setting up that interview with Natalya. That was awesome. You can stream WWE Premium live events and weekly WWE shows, Raw, SmackDown, NXT, on Sportsnet Plus from $14.99 a month. Visit sportsnetplus.ca/WWE to subscribe. That was an awesome chat. This is going to be an awesome chat as well. Cavs, Calgary FC, they begin their CPL season this weekend in Hamilton to take on their forever rivals, Forge FC, and we're joined by GM and head coach of Calgary FC, Tommy Wheeldon Jr. Tommy, thanks so much for taking some time. I know it's a busy time right now, but thanks for chatting some Cavs with me.
Yeah, no worries. Thanks for having me on.
No problem. Let's chat about this past weekend. I know we didn't get to see you guys at Shouldice for your little preseason soiree, but you're still able to get a match in up at the Calgary West Soccer Center. Had a nice showing out there. Watched you guys. It was pretty fun. Talk about that.
Yeah, do you know, it was good. I think it's always nice to, you know, we wanted to do Shouldice. I think that's probably a tip of the cap to, you know, how the Pro-Am journey began. I think it launched there in 2015 mm-hmm. with the previous iteration of Calgary Foothills. And from that, the Foot Soldiers were born. And from that, a lot of players and coaches that have been part of it went on. So it's kind of a bit of a legacy thing where you think before Spruce Meadows is ready for the whole league experience, let's remember the roots that we came from. Unfortunately, the weather, as we know in Calgary, didn't cooperate, as we know with that, with the CONCACAF schedule. So, as always, you adapt and overcome. We're fortunate now. We live in a city that has several indoor spaces, mm-hmm. and Calgary West was a good one for the players to play. And the game against Calgary Foothills was, again, another tip of the cap to somewhere where a lot of this professional dream was made. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, we had a good game. They give us a good effort, as we did, like, with Orlando. And, yeah, it was good to get some competitive minutes and try a few things and meet a few of our fans again.
Yeah, it was super, super awesome, super intimate environment there. But, yeah, hopefully the spring is here, and we're going to be outdoors the rest of the way. Forge on Saturday. I know this is your guy. This is your big rival right now. I know what are the vibes around the group, you know, heading into Hamilton right now?
I think we're just excited for it, to be honest. Mm-hmm. It's We've obviously had a couple of it's been a bit of a different preseason, coming back earlier, preparing for CONCACAF Champions Cup, and then we took time away, then went back to Mexico for training camp, and then have come back. These are a great group of players that want to compete. So you can only contain them so long, you can only spar with them for so long. They want to put it out there on the pitch, and what better place to go than Tim Hortons Field, where you know there's going to be a good atmosphere, a really good opponent to play against, and we're just looking forward to competing again.
I know you guys will always have the next man up mentality, but the club announced, you know, last year's Golden Boot winner, Meyer Bevan's not going to be joining the club this year. I know you can only go so far into it, but of course we'll respect his privacy. But kind of give us the cliff notes of what went on to this decision.
Yeah, and I think that you know that there, he's a young man with mm-hmm. a very young family, yep. and with it, you know, he's got some personal reasons. And say that he didn't come by these decisions, you know, easily. It's been a struggle for him, so we have to respect his privacy at this point. But he meant a lot to us, means a lot to the players, but we do have to keep moving forward. We still have a club to run, and mm-hmm. respect the time that he needs with his family to make the decisions they need to make for themselves, and we need to do the same with ours.
Of course. And then you go out and get Malcolm Shaw to mm-hmm. help add to this attacking group. Well, he played a heck of a time there in Ottawa. But what has impressed you the most about his game, as he's only been around for a couple weeks?
Yeah, do you know what? He's a player that always causes problems. So, you know, anytime you want to sign a domestic striker from within the league, the best reference points are the defenders in our own team that give them problems. And I think what I liked about Malcolm is, one, his versatility. He's a powerful striker. He can contribute to goals, but he can play in multiple roles. And I think you're seeing that within our system, is we have to be tactically flexible because of, you know, we play the same teams four times. So you've got to change the page a little bit in terms of what you're going to put out there as a tactical principle. But your playing principles will always be the same. He suits us. He's a really good professional. He's also a Trinidad and Tobago international, so he knows what the CONCACAF scene's about. So and he's at a good age. He's 28. He's he's not a young player that we're still trying to develop. He's a ready-made pro that we can integrate a lot quicker. And I think he's come in and he's impressed the group, the staff, the players. And I think he'll be a terrific addition for us this year.
Ideally, who would you want right now as your main number nine striker heading into Saturday?
I can't give them secrets away. I'm sure there's
fair.
People in Forge and Hamilton there, but
that's fair.
I think what we've got is we've got a number of players, and I think if you cast on last year, you know, obviously now we've got Tobias Worszewski, we've got mm-hmm. Malcolm Shaw, we've had Willie Akio that can play down the middle, Ali Moussi's played as a false nine before, Sergio Camargo's done it. So I think what it will depend on is we'll have an idea going into Saturday's game, but those things will change. And, you know, Mai Bevan took over the number nine position from Joe Mason, who mm-hmm. was our then leading scorer. So things can happen in football. Oh, yeah. It's about the players taking their opportunity.
How have the new guys acclimated into? I know they had some time during the CONCACAF Champions or CONCACAF Cup match against Orlando, but how have Toby, Diego, Luis acclimated themselves with Cavs?
Brilliant. What's been great is you've got people like Luis Diaz that comes from, you know, Sport in Lisbon, mm-hmm. which is a massive club, and Jack Barrett from Everton.
Yep.
And they come in here as humble and as hungry as anybody, and they're trying to earn their playing time. They know they're here. They see the standard of play. I think they've been very impressed with it. They're trying to understand, you know, our principles of play. But what they'll do is create us good options throughout the season. Diego, we know he's one of those players that can play in all positions across the midfield, and he's one of the most rounded midfielders in the league. Toby's just different. I don't think I've worked with a striker of his abilities. He's very versatile. He's got a soft touch and a powerful way about him. Strikes a great ball and gives us a different weapon. And in Leighton Brooks, we've got a very, very direct winger that's probably our fastest player. And I think you're going to need that and see that in different moments of our season.
We're talking with Tommy Wheeldon Jr., general manager and head coach of Cavalry FC. Cavs get their season underway on Saturday, 2 p.m. start against Forge FC. What's the injury situation like heading into Forge? I think Myles Henry was the only one that didn't play in the preseason.
Yeah, that's correct. And right now he's the only one that's not available for selection. He's just nursing hamstring. And so we'll have to take our time with it because he's a fast twitch fiber player, and you've got to make sure that when he does return, he's, you know, he strengthened that area because the lad's got a lot of ability, and, you know, being an under 21 player will contribute to those minutes that we require this year. But yeah, aside from that, lads, they'll always have their bumps and bruises because of the way we play, the way we train. But fortunately, right now we've got we're going to have to leave some players at home in Calgary when we travel to Hamilton.
Three players that you just signed yesterday that could help add to that under 21 minutes. Nico Maranyuk, he had a time last year with Cavs, had some injury trouble, but he had a heck of a time with the under 21 team. But talk about the three guys you signed yesterday that can help add to the under 21.
Really good. And local players.
Yes.
I think, you know, we always have to remember is local players just give you more. They know what this club is about. They know what this city means. They're connected to the community. They're out there, you know, whether they're playing at university at Mount Royal, which Caden and Nico were, mm-hmm. you know, out in Cape Breton. You know, Max is a U Sports champion this year. These lads have come through, you know, your Calgary Foothills system, as well as I think Nico was at Blizzards and Southwest. These are connected to the Calgary minor soccer system as well. And I think you've got to have those success stories that there are multiple pathways to get onto the first team. And those lads have played in the Cavs under 20s as well. And they've come through that system as well as now being draft picks for the U Sports. And I think what they do is they give us players that know our system and they're reliable and when they get their moment to play in it. And when we took them to Mexico, they really gave a great account of themselves. And they were dead certs when we signed them.
I know, like, this league, it's still in its infancy age, if you want to talk about leagues, but it feels like heading in this year, it from top to bottom, like, it feels like this might be the strongest group of eight clubs that the league's had to offer. Do you kind of get that sense? I know a lot can happen as we get into the season, injuries-wise, but you kind of get that sense that, hey, this is going to be a tough go of things this year.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think you and I had this conversation this time last year. There was a lot of off-season signings. People mm-hmm. were very excited about it. You know, I think everybody, you know, if you look at teams on paper, very strong, very deep now. You know, it used to be, you know, there'd be seven or eight players that you're like, oh, they're good, and didn't know the rest. Now I think people are putting together squads of teams, you know, 23-man squads that, you know, 16 to 18 are competing for that starting 11, and then they're having good young depth going into it. But as we know, you know, some things look good on paper, but the game's played on the pitch, and what happens is your tactics, your strategies, your consistency. Something we've always shown is no matter if we start well or not, then we'll always have a spell of consistency. And that's the difference between those that are challenging for championships and those that just become, you know, part of the fodder. So I think we're going to respect every opponent we play. But yeah, it should make for a better quality for the neutral fans across the country.
After Forge, you know, you got three games in 8 days. You're only playing Ottawa on Saturday. Then you come home for your first Canadian Championship game against Vancouver, and then Pacific for the season home opener. Have you started to plan ahead for the next couple weeks and starting to see, hey, okay, we're gonna be going a lot here with three games in 8 days in such an early part of the year?
Yeah, you have an idea of it, but I think we've always been that one game at a time type of team. Mm-hmm. And right now, all eyes have been on Forge, but we're aware that when we come back, we've got another good week of prep, and then there's a couple of doubleheaders, and especially a doubleheader home as well, which we can't wait to, you know, the tarps are off this Tuesday. Yeah. So it's nice to see the green grass underneath. We can't wait to be back at Spruce Meadows. You know, we've enjoyed, we train at the Metcon Centre indoors, but, you know, to be out there is something special. So, yeah, you cast one eye on it, but really right now, all attention will be set on Forge.
Away from Cavs, love chatting the sport with you. I know you cheer for the blue side of Liverpool in Everton. I know it's been a rough go. They had a third announced point deduction. But as a supporter of Everton, what's this roller coaster been like for you guys?
Oh, depressing.
Yeah, yeah.
It is. You know, my dad and my brother and, you know, even my sons, they're obviously everyone's into Everton. But what it does do, it tests your allegiance to your team because, you know, if you're going to be a true fan, you got to be through there for better or worse. And, you know, that's why I got a lot of respect for the age-old Man City fans. Everyone thinks they were a success, overnight success. But, you know, they got relegated two divisions before they rose through the ranks. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not down in those doldrums yet. But I tell you what, it does make a depressing atmosphere when they keep getting docked points at you. It doesn't give any stability to the game, to the supporters. So, unfortunately, when you've got, you know, those that get docked the points and those that are still under charges that aren't, it feels like something's being made towards Everton, and mm-hmm. they don't have enough money to pay for the lawyers that maybe certain other clubs have. I don't know, but yeah, it's certainly a tough ride. But you know, through that, you find out who your true supporters are, and you find out who your true character is. Right, that's that face of adversity. Mm-hmm.
I know it's just in the Premier League. We know it's the biggest league on the planet, but, you know, they have, it feels like it's just such a discrepancy between the haves and have-nots. What's your thoughts on the financial situation of the game right now? It's getting a lot more scary with these fees and like the clubs like City and Chelsea and the ones that are owned by, you know, city states essentially just dominating over the little guys. Do you feel like there needs to be something here? Done something sooner rather than later, or we're gonna lose a lot in this game.
Yeah, and before that was the Russian oligarchs, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And I think you're seeing things change very, very quickly, and it's you know, some of the clubs like your Everton's and Forest that are now, you know, trying to play catch up that maybe haven't understood or something's gone wrong. And I think we're in Everton's case, they were docked money, they were docked the points initially for going over budget, building a stadium that will be used to the community. They didn't necessarily invest it just on their team, but with it was because of the Usmanov money, who was part of the, you know, the Russia and the Ukraine war, that had his money seized. That was going to be the sponsor of the new stadium, which would have then, you know, cancelled out the £36 million debt that they accrued, which then put them into FFP, financial fair play discrimination. And I think there was no dispensation given to that as it pertains to others. I don't know how they do it, but they obviously, like us, we have a salary cap that we have to do. Mm-hmm. We have to be compliant with it. We have to sign affidavits for it. And within our salary cap, you know, everything, players, housing, to flights in and out of here, to their salaries, to bonuses, all gets equated into the 1.125 budget that we have for our playing staff. We have to go through this and to make sure we're always compliant. I don't know what the solution is in the Premier League, because every time you bring in a new rule, it gets usurped by some other creative accounting or other things. But it's you know, I know NBA, I know NHL, they have caps and they have to be compliant in there. But there's talk now of this luxury tax, which is, you know, the rich, they can just pay it. Mm-hmm. Those that are in a way, like a Notts Forest that are coming through, or a Burnley that are trying to compete on a lesser budget, they have to be creative in other ways.
Yeah, it's a scary situation. I know that luxury tax was bantered around, but yeah, they feels like they need to get together, the big leagues, and figure something out, because it's just the greed has gotten too much in this game. Tommy, thank you so much. I know you got a lot more prep to do heading out to Forge, but we'll do this again soon. I know we got some stuff in the hopper. We'll maybe do this more on a permanent basis. But yeah, Tommy, thank you so much for taking time. We'll see you Saturday. I'll be out there.
All right, thanks. Cheers. Bye.
No problem. There you go. Tommy Wheeldon Jr., Calgary FC general manager and head coach. They get their season underway on Saturday against Forge FC.
Excited for your little trip to go watch these guys?
Yeah, exactly. It's going to be all right. We're going to go to Toronto tomorrow. We're going to watch the Blue Jays, hopefully get back in the win column against the Colorado Rockies. It's been I've been out to the Rogers Center in a while.
No, I've never seen a live baseball game before. Oh. I've been like nowhere. We've discussed this before,
Going
to check out Jay's game is definitely something on my bucket list, especially with the way the new diamond is looking right now and all the renovations that they've done to it. Looks awesome. One of the premier ballparks in all of Major League Baseball right now.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun atmosphere for sure tomorrow against the Colorado Rockies. Going to have some fun for sure. This NHL schedule tonight, we'll kind of run down this thing one more time here. It said kind of circled out the schedule as Detroit and Pittsburgh is the main game. At 5 o'clock, out west, like I mentioned, the Jets and Stars. The Stars, I believe, can clinch the Central Division with a win in that one. Jets still trying to fight for the second seed in the Central Division. Anything else outside of that Detroit Pittsburgh game? The Philadelphia Flyers are probably on life support here. They probably got to go into MSG and get the 2 points. Washington, they needed the 2 points against Buffalo. And God, you know, I don't know. I don't want to say Buffalo would still be in it, but if they get back in it, 81, 4 points out with 3 to play,
yeah,
or 2 to play. I don't know. It's it for Buffalo. I would say. No, Buffalo was officially eliminated. What am I talking about?
Done.
They were eliminated against Dallas.
You know,
cancel me.
Another, you're okay. The other team that's still in that race for even a spot in the Metro right now, the Islanders are taking on the Canadiens. Tarkovsky coming off a hat trick right now. Montreal might be looking to play spoiler in that one. The Islanders are a team. They play some boring hockey, and sometimes that works in the playoffs. They're not necessarily anyone's favorite to try and make the playoffs here if you're looking at it just from a pure entertainment standpoint. But Patrick Waugh has done a pretty good job of getting that team back into the race here, and they're going to make it close as well.
Yeah, they're
a team that really doesn't even have like an absolute game breaker outside of their goaltending and Sorokin.
No,
and Dobson's strong on their blue line too, but other than that, Barzal, I guess. But I don't think he's in that same echelon of like game breaking elite players. But
hey, I mean, like still, you're a consistent point per game player. You're a good player in my books, and I'm not saying he's not a game breaker or whatnot, or not a good player, but the Islanders, they just do this.
I think game breaker.
Year.
I think like top 10 player.
I get that.
I understand. It's all semantics, but
yeah, the Islanders are a fascinating case study. How they do this with generally the same team that's been this team for a while, like. You know, J.G. Peugeot is still there. Anders Lee has been there for a while. Kyle Palmieri's been there.
Anders Lee's having a tough season.
Brock Nelson, maybe the most like quiet 30-goal man this league has to offer. He hit the 30 mark again this year. He had 36 last year, 37 the year before. So that's three straight 30-goal campaigns for Brock Nelson. The Islanders, they're a team that just they fascinate me because like they don't get a lot of love. They don't get a lot of talk about outside of that market, really. Which is a great fan base out there. I know it's not the same as it was at Fort Neverluz in Uniondale, but the new arena in Belmont, they're probably and maybe they get a benefit of avoiding the wild card and I don't know. They probably lose to Carolina in the first round.
They got no chance.
They probably have no chance against Carolina, but they're just a team that just you know wasn't that long ago they were in back to back Eastern Conference Finals.
Exactly, with basically the same group, like other than Bo Horvat that's on their first line center spot right now. Other than that, they're an old team that just continues to try and play this boring style of hockey and try and grossly grit and grind out some wins in the playoffs. Like, the Metro is just too stacked, up way too top heavy with the Rangers and the Hurricanes there. I don't like any of those guys, any of these teams fighting for a spot in that Metro and in any sort of series against any of those two teams. But listen, man, credit to the Islanders for putting this pile of old veterans together and trying to make the playoffs here. But
Patrick Waugh, I think he's going to be there for a while. And I think he's going to do his thing down there, and it's made the Islanders a little bit more relevant, a little bit more fun to watch. That'll do it for us. That'll do it for me for this week. I'll be back on Tuesday. I got Brent Cron hosting for 3 hours tomorrow.
Should Mac, be chaotic tomorrow.
We're going to have Mike Vernon in studio as well. Frank Saravalli joins the program. I'll be back on Tuesday. Want to thank all of our guests today, Sam Cosentino, Jeff Merrick, Dennis Bernstein. Thank you to the WWE for setting up our interview with Natalia. And, of course, Calvary FC manager and head coach Tommy Wheeldon Jr. Thank you to GVP for making us sound oh so good, and intern Simon for joining in on the ride. The Jeff Merrick Show is up next. I have a lineup for you. 10:35, Thomas Hickey talking some Islanders.
There you go.
Yeah, 11 o'clock, Gordon Monson from the Salt Lake Tribune. We'll be joining the show, talking a little.
Very
what does Salt Lake City have to offer for the NHL? At 11:15.
Water for a rink, apparently.
Water, they do have that. Well, you know, the Great Salt Lake is drying up.
Ah, yeah.
11:15, Anton Thune, and then 11:35, Charlie O'Connor from The Athletic. That's the next. It is Calgary Flames game day. Pre-game goes at 7:30. Puck drop a little bit after 8:30 right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. It's a beautiful day. Have fun today. We'll talk at you next Tuesday. Keep it locked right here, Sportsnet 960 The Fan.